Well, let's go back to 1 Samuel, where we read together. It's good to be here with you this morning. This week I've been down in Edinburgh at in-service training, it's a refresher course. One of the things I had to do this week was a preaching workshop. And I had to preach in front of 30 of my colleagues. I could tell you it's a lot easier preaching here. I'm preaching in front of 30 ministers. So I'm glad to be here back with yourselves and not preaching to 30 ministers. Although they're all my friends, it's still a pretty nerve-wracking experience. But why have a preaching workshop? Well, because the church has a message. Church has got something to say. And that something is contained in the story of God's dealing with people throughout the Bible. And we're going to study over the next several weeks part of that story from the beginning of 1 Samuel. It's an exciting story. It comes from a long time ago. We're talking about 3,000 years ago. And we began last week to think about how one insignificant woman by the name of Hannah is focused on. Whenever that happens in the Bible, and suddenly the story stops and starts focusing on a woman who's about to have a baby, you think, uh-oh, something big is about to happen. Of course, that woman might be Mary, who is engaged to Joseph, and she's about to give birth to Jesus. But there are many other examples, and here's one here. This woman is focused in on it because she's about to give birth to Samuel. And Samuel is going to be a man to bring in a whole new era of history for the nation of Israel and really for the world as well. So chapter 1 tells us, with this focus on the birth, something big is about to happen. Now, if you were reading this story from the Greek version of the Bible, the Old Testament, which was translated from the Hebrew about 300 BC, you wouldn't find 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel, 1 Kings and 2 Kings. You'd actually find the four books of kingdoms. That's what it's called, the four books of kingdoms. Because this is what it's really all about. The thing that's about to happen is Israel is about to get a king. At the moment they're just a motley assemblage of tribes. A motley assemblage of idol-worshipping, cruelly oppressed tribes. The Philistines are crushing them, and they're a miserable bunch, really. But this story is going to take them from that place until they're a monarchy, a united nation under a king who leads them in the worship of the true and the living God. Now, you might think that's impossible. How can a nation which is just like a scattered band of disparate tribes who worship their various gods and haven't got much in common except that way back then they all came from Father Abraham, to being a united nation that put away their idols and that worship the Lord? How can that happen? History is full of the impossible. Like 25 years ago, it was impossible that the Soviet Union would ever come to an end. And yet, the Berlin Wall fell, the Iron Curtain fell, God raised up a Gorbachev who led the glasnost, the perestroika, the openness, the reform, remember? And things changed. And God can do that throughout history. Whether it's a secular figure like Mikhail Gorbachev, or whether it's a reform figure like Martin Luther, or here a man like Samuel. And if you trace history, the great revolutions, the great turning points, always focus in on one person. There's always one person. Often someone who comes out of complete obscurity. Someone born to a peasant family. Someone born in a working class family, say, and they come out of that and they rise up to prominence because God has appointed them to bring about change. They may seem in a way to be just like little pawns And certainly Hannah and her family are, if you like, just pawns. It's like a game of chess. This week, the hotel that we were put up in, the man who was kind of organizing our rooms and so on in the hotel, a man called Eric, he was from the south of France, and he was an international chess master, as well as working in a hotel. I was so impressed. I didn't try to play him at chess. But in the game of chess, when you begin your game, it's just the little figures that you move first, just the pawns. They're not powerful figures, just little pawns. But that's how the game, the contest starts. And eventually, it'll come into an all-out contest between the powerful figures, like the bishops and the queens and the rooks and all the rest of it. And the aim is to capture the king. The aim is checkmate. And that's what's happening in this story. We're just moving the pawns just now. But the story's going to unfold into a great outcome. The checkmate of evil in the nation of Israel. And Hannah, this woman who's at the centre of her story now, she sees it. It's like she's been given a vision from God. And at the end of her prayer in chapter 2, she says, God will give strength to his king. The king hasn't even come yet. It's like she sees what's coming. So, let's home in on this story. Maybe we can just read before we go any further the words in verse 26, 27 and 28 of chapter 1. So she said to Eli the priest, remember she promised Eli, or she promised God that she'd devote her child to God. And now he's weaned, this little boy Samuel. He's probably about 3 years old. And she comes to Eli on the annual trip they make up to where the kind of tent of meeting, the kind of temple that they worship at is in a place called Shiloh. And she says to Eli, the priest there, as surely as you live, my Lord, I am the woman who stood here beside you praying to the Lord. I prayed for this child, and the Lord has granted me what I ask of him. So now I give him to the Lord. For his whole life he shall be given over to the Lord. And Eli worshipped the Lord there. So there's Hannah handing over her little boy to the care of Eli and those working at the temple in Shiloh. I want us to see three things here this morning. How God uses three different kinds of people in his big stories and the big things that he does. I want us to see that God uses parents, and then that God uses the persecuted, and finally that God uses pains. You'll see more about that in a minute. God uses parents. Parenting is one of the great unsung tasks and jobs of our society. There's nothing more challenging than parenting. It's much more difficult to be a good parent than to be a good director of a company. Much more difficult. It's a much greater task. That's why sometimes you maybe ask a parent, what's your job? And maybe they don't have paid employment. But that parent should say, I'm a parent. You don't have to have a paid job to have a job. Being a parent is much more challenging than most jobs on offer in our society today. And Hannah has become a parent. And as a parent of this wonderful son whom she's got by answer to prayer, her faith is great in God. God, the living God, whose name is Yahweh, the Lord, is a great God. He's a big God. He's a kind God. And she understands God is a God who gives children. Her child has come from God. And because of this vow that she's made to God, she's got to give that child back. And she rejoices. Verse 1 of chapter 2, she says, I rejoice in the Lord. He's a great God. He's a God who does amazing things. That's something to think about. those of us who are parents, do we think this way, that our children are gifts from God? Sometimes the little monsters might not seem gifts from God. But our children are gifts from God. We might not even have thought about that when we set about having children. And we think in a way it's a biological process. But Hannah's realised that she couldn't have kids. And then God granted her the ability to have children. And she realises childbearing is a gift from God. Children are a gift from God. Do we as parents think about our children in that way? And do we therefore live in such a way as to reflect that and pray for our children? And pray that our children may be given to the God who gave them to us. Like Hannah, she gives her child to God. The Lord has granted me what I asked of him, verse 27. Now I give him to the Lord. Do we try and do that with our children? Do we give them to the Lord? Do we seek to raise them to know the Lord? Teach them about the Lord? To love the God who gives life? That's a great responsibility. Now, I think there was a temptation for Hannah. I think it must have been really hard as Hannah gave birth to this child and got bonded to this little boy and loved him and cared for him for the first 3 years of his life until he was weaned, and they weaned much later back then. It must have been a real temptation for her to say, well, maybe I won't give him back to God. I've made this promise that I will, but maybe I won't. God's given him to me now, so maybe I'll just keep him for myself. It must have been a real temptation. Temptation not to leave him at Shiloh, not to leave him with Eli the priest. And so Elkanah in verse 23 says, stay here until you've weaned the child. Only may the Lord make good his word. Or an alternative reading is your word. In other words, keep your promise, Hannah. You made that promise. God gave you the child. Keep your promise. Maybe she was tempted not to. And there we begin to see one of the big themes in this book, and it's a theme of obedience, even when it's difficult. And it's difficult to be obedient to God in our society too. It's difficult for people who've had their children baptized to keep their baptism vows, because there are pressures in our society to bring up our children in a way that is really godless and atheistic. And it's a real challenge to keep those vows, to be obedient when it's not easy. And Hannah's an example here of someone who resists the temptation just to go with the flow. She's going to do something different. Now you might be saying to me, but Roddy, are you serious that leaving a three-year-old boy with an old priest is a good idea? What mother in her right mind would do that? Well, first of all, she has made that promise. She says, if you give me a child, I'll give him to you. God has given her the child. So she must therefore realize that God intends that she should give him the child back. So she's got to trust God that if he was able to give her the child in the first place, he's able to look after the child when she leaves him at Shiloh with the priest. Of course, the priest isn't the only person there. We read in later on in chapter 2 that there were female servants, and no doubt they would take care of the boy. And we do also know that she wasn't living that far away, maybe only about 15 miles, so we're told they went up once a year to visit. She maybe went up at other times as well to visit her son. So she reassured herself that it wasn't a complete madness, and her faith in God helped her to do this. Not a recommended thing. It's not for any of us to do. It's not for us to get our children till they're three and hand them over in some way like that. But this is a unique situation. But Hannah was reassured that her son would be okay. And it's something that every parent has to do. We all have to learn to trust regarding our children. we have to entrust them to God. We can't mollycoddle them and cotton wool wrap them all the time. We have to send them out into the world, into difficult situations. Maybe just going to school, and maybe going to their friend's house or whatever. And maybe our instinct is to protect them from things that we don't want them to be exposed to or whatever. But sometimes we've just got to trust and pray and hand our children over to God, because they're growing up and they've got to discover the world for themselves and discover how to live for themselves. And it's really difficult. It's just like teaching the child to ride a bike. You want to keep holding that bike forever, but no, you've got to let go, and they've got to let them fall off sometimes until they learn to balance themselves and go themselves. We have to, as parents, learn to trust. And hopefully we can learn to trust God as we pray for our children, and we can also learn to trust others sometimes who have responsibility for our children at other times. Childminders, teachers, parents of the children's friends or whatever. So God uses parents, and it's a tremendously responsible task. The same thing is though that God uses the persecuted. And Hannah is a persecuted woman in this story. She's persecuted by her rival, Peninnah. And she understands that even though she is at the bottom of the pile in the story, God can still raise her up and take her out of the place she's in. He can, as it says in verse 8 of chapter 2, raise the poor from the dust. She who is barren, verse 5 says, can bear children. Those who are hungry can hunger no more. God can turn things around. And so she in her prayer, she discovers that God is like that. And she warns Peninnah, verse 3, don't keep talking so proudly. There's a lot I'd like to say about this, and I've committed a complete error as far as my preaching tutorial this week's concerned, and I'm only halfway through my sermon and it's time to finish. So I'm going to have to move fast now. But see, this is what God's like. He's a God who helps the persecuted. He's on their side. She sees that her having a son was not just like a lucky break. It was God acting on her behalf. And if we ourselves are downtrodden, persecuted, oppressed, or if indeed we see others who are like that, we can particularly pray to God and ask Him to come on side in that situation. God hates oppression. God hates injustice. God hates when people use power to destroy others. God hates that. So God can use people who think that they're at the bottom of the pile. People who are persecuted, like Hannah. There's more I could say about that, but let me just quickly move on. God uses pains as well. Now, what am I talking about there? Well, I'm talking about this other woman in the story, and we read about in chapter 1, Hannah's rival, Peninnah. There are lots of Inas in our community. Inas, all of them are wonderful, but this one wasn't. This Inah, if you like, Peninnah or Peninnah. She was a real pain. But God overrules. See, all this smirk she makes, huh? You can't have children. All the jibes, all the hurts she causes to Hannah, only drive Hannah to seek God. And because of that, she finds God's deliverance. God gives her not just one son, in the end, 6 children. If we have to endure pains, painful people, people who cause us pain, let that be what happens with us too. May it not make us bitter or vindictive, May it not make us just like the people who are pains and we become a mirror image of what they're like, but we become that towards them. But instead, may our spirits remain sweet. May we seek God and seek His answers and His deliverance. So we come here in this prayer in chapter 2, where Hannah's pouring out her heart in worship to God, to a moment of discovery. A woman has discovered that God, the true God, the God of the world, is a God who sides with those who are unjustly oppressed. And in this beautiful prayer, she declares that. She's discovered that's what God's like. He's not distant. He's not a God who forgets about people. He's not a God who's not interested in the world. He's a God who cares for the oppressed. He's on side with those who are suffering. Yesterday we heard about the British government upping its aid given to help eradicate neglected tropical diseases. And now, they're instead of giving something like £50 million, they're going to give £245 million to eradicate these neglected tropical diseases, which are horrible. They disfigure and destroy people. £245 million. Of course, there were critics. There were people saying, wait a minute, Britain's going through a time of austerity. What are we giving £245 million to poor parts of the world for when look at us and look at how we're suffering? But wait a minute. That's just exactly like saying, hey, don't give Hannah any children. Give Penina more children. That's what it's like. If we're criticising our government for making a courageous decision, that's not a political comment, by the way, just the right thing to do, we're not poor compared to the people who are suffering from these horrible tropical diseases who don't have a doctor to go to. We're not poor. Would we really say in this story, give Penina more kids? She's already got half a dozen. Give her some more. Forget Hannah. No, we wouldn't. When we see the oppressed, we should side with the oppressed. And in this case, there are people all over the world desperately oppressed by diseases that we don't ever have because they've been long ago, if they ever were in our country, they've been long ago removed from our country, and we have care and treatment for them. God's heart is to care for the oppressed. And our country and our own lives will prosper when we recognise this. When we in our own lives champion the Hannahs in our own community and in the world. And when we in our own lives as well recognise that we are very much like Hannah. We are all naturally barren. Not in terms of childbearing, but spiritually. We are all oppressed. And we all need to go to God for His deliverance, His forgiveness, His salvation from sin through Jesus Christ. And when, like Hannah, we discover that God is a great deliverer, a God who's on the side of the oppressed, a God who raises up people from the ash heap, from the rubbish pile, when we discover that God is like that, then our hearts will be full to overflowing like Hannah's was. And we'll delight in God. And we'll want to share the good news of our God with our community, that others too will know He's a God who delivers. He's a God who answers prayer. He's a God who sides with those who are unjustly oppressed. He's a God who turns around hopeless situations. He's a God who can do the impossible. He's a God who can deliver whole nations. North Korea these days perhaps. Syria or whatever, places where there's horrible oppression. He can do that. And we'll walk tall in a world where there's a lot of brokenness and a lot of trouble. We'll walk tall knowing God's in control. And if people ask Him to help, He will help. We're going to close now by singing words, this time in the Black Psalm, the traditional Psalm 40. Psalm 40. I'm sorry for my timing this morning. It's been atrocious. Psalm 40. We'll sing verses 1 to 4. Psalm 40, 1 to 4. I waited for the Lord my God, it says. I was in a pit, a desperate place. I cried out to him, and he lifted me out. And that's a wonderful thing about God, it says. Many other people are going to see that, and they're going to rely on God too. Because he's a God who delivers those who turn to him and doesn't respect the proud. Verse 4. So verses 1 to 4 we'll sing. Verses 1 to 4 of Psalm 40. And we'll stand to sing.
I
Jesus Christ, and the love of God the Father, and the fellowship of the Holy Spirit rest upon and remain with each one of you, now and always. Amen. Members, a cup of tea next door, if you want one.